Well, tonight we continue our series on the glossary of God, terms that are important to us as Christians, but aren't so important outside the walls of the church, the walls being the spiritual walls of the family of God. And it's interesting, of course, one another, that comes up. People say that in passing. They say that in business, one another. But it's hard to imagine that this would ever come up out in the world as frequently and as meaningfully as it comes up in our language, in our context. And so this is precious. Of course, everybody has a one another sentence here and there, but this is very precious to us as Christians. And there's really nothing quite like this outside the family of God. So just a little definition here to begin with. In Greek, you know, this would just be one word. It's not one another, two words. It's allelon. And it's reciprocal, a reciprocal pronoun. So you see in the bottom bullet there, it's what every believer should give and receive. It spins in a cycle. And so we are going to do this for one another. You for me for you, and around we go. In the middle point there, the bulleted point says this comes up frequently in the New Testament, whenever it describes how the Christian life in the family of God is to be lived. So we see one another constantly in the New Testament. We're going to look at some of the many texts, not all of them, but some of the many texts that talk about how we should be reciprocating behaviors and attitudes toward one another. And let us start with some secret things, secret matters of the heart. We find out that we are supposed to accept one another. And how would I know if you accept me? It's secret. I will never know that. I mean, sometimes people are accepting in such an obvious way. It's very comforting. But I won't really know if you accept me in your heart or not. From Romans chapter 15, verse 7, read it with me. Wherefore, receive one another as Christ also received us to the glory of God. It's the idea of receiving and accepting. Are you receiving me into your heart as I'm receiving you into mine? That's the idea. And it's secret. If when you go home from church, you talk badly about somebody, evidently you haven't accepted them. You haven't received them into your heart in a tender way. They are not accepted in your frame of reference. And you don't want to live like that. You want to accept people. You want to receive them. I like you. I'm on your side. I want to be in a relationship with you. And that's secret. Another thing that can be indicated externally, but is oftentimes quite secret in its nature, is the idea of bearing with one another. We find it in Ephesians 4:1, for example. So read it with me. Walk worthy of the vocation wherewith ye are called, with all lowliness and meekness, with long suffering, forbearing one another in love. And at the last line, you see that, forbearing one another. Bear with one another. Maybe you don't want to bear with somebody. You're tired. You're impatient. You don't want to bear with. I've had it up to here with you. I'm done with you. And not just today. From now on, I'm going to avoid you because I don't want to be around you. That's not bearing with somebody. Imagine family disputes, church fights, business lawsuits, many horrible things that take place because somebody says, you know, I've had it up to my eyeballs with you and I'm done. I'm not going to bear with you anymore. Well, this text says we should be forbearing one another in love. And so you have to bear with the other person, even if he strikes you as being odd, if he strikes you as being hard to get along with, you bear with him. That's what we're called to do. Let me show you another one like that. Ephesians 4:32 talks about forgiving. And so read it with me. And be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you. So there it is, forgiving people. If you want to treat people like you've been treated, well, you've been forgiven, right? So if you've been forgiven so much, how can you not forgive the next person? And if you make a mistake, you're hoping that that person will forgive you for the mistake that you've made. And so it's reciprocal. You'll forgive one another. It was hard for you to have me for a friend. Maybe it's hard for me to have you for a friend. and yet we forgive one another, and then everything's okay. I think there's one more here. Oh, yeah. This is a secret thing as well. How would you know if you're honoring somebody? You might never know that. There are ways to indicate that externally, but it really starts on the inside. And Romans 12:10 talks about this, so read it with me. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. Preferring, I prefer to do it your way. We would normally say, I defer to you. What would you like to do? I'll do it your way. How would you like to handle this? I defer to you. How do you want to do it? And by and large, that honoring of somebody in the heart is secret. I don't know if you want to make me happy. I don't know that. I hope that that's true. We do that with our children, don't we? We would say sometimes to our children, you know, I just want to do whatever will make you happy. If, you know, if we're dealing with righteous things, if you want to be a garbage collector, then I'm cheering for you. I hope you're a garbage collector. You want to be a fireman? You want to be a jet pilot? I just want you to be happy. Whatever you want. I want you to enjoy life. I honor you. I defer to you. What do you want me to do? I'll help you. And that's kindly affection one to another with brotherly love. And I defer to you. Another one like that, which mainly happens in the heart. I mean, you can see it externally as well. But Ephesians 5:21 talks about submitting one to another. So read this one with me. Submitting yourselves to one another in the fear of Christ. So here we are constantly. It's just like the idea of preferring the other, deferring to the other. I'll do it your way. What do you want us to do? The only limits you put on those kinds of things are the welfare of others, the wisdom of God. You know, I could give the homeless guy 8 hours a day for the next 2 months. But if I do, then a lot of you are going to be neglected. So when I don't do that, that wouldn't be because I don't love him. That would be because wisdom doesn't really allow me to invest my life in one person who is committed to being a taker. The Lord doesn't allow me to do that. But I love him enough to do that. So here we are talking about submitting. If there was a homeless person, a brother who was living badly, there is no end to my submission to him except by wisdom. If the Lord is leading me not to give up my wife and children and other ministry, then I can't give those up to serve him. But as far as it goes in my heart, I'm willing to be a servant to that guy all day, every day, until I die. The reason I'm not is because I don't think God wants me to. But that is a matter of wisdom, not willingness to submit. And all those things happen on the inside. Not that there aren't externals, but they're internalized. You won't know if somebody is honoring you, preferring you, submitting to you, forgiving you. You won't know those things many times, accepting you. That happens in the secret place of the heart. And yet that's how we're supposed to be doing this for one another. Can you imagine in your wildest dreams, can you imagine what the Church of Jesus Christ would be like if we stopped right here and said, that's how we'll treat each other? It would be paradise. And some of us have been mighty close to paradise. We have had Christian people rally around us and be truly beautiful, doing these one another things in the secret places of their heart. And it is paradise. It is phenomenal, amazing, and wonderful. But when we start deviating from that, when we lose our way in these secret places of the heart, every ugly thing is possible. It all starts here. So how does that strike you? Does that raise any observations or questions? Josiah. Certainly salvation. I mean, that's the big one. So in what way has Christ received us? You know, receive one another as Christ also has received us to the glory of God. So Christ accepts us in the, you know, big acceptance, salvation, but also in 10,000 little acceptances. You know, I'm sure that every single person in this room has done something that was ugly to Jesus. You know, we have, even if we have not overtly sinned in a particular matter today, I'll bet we committed an indignity. You know, that was poorly done. I'm not saying it was a sin. I'm saying it was poorly done. And then on top of that, we have done the outright sins. You know, we were irritable with somebody today and whatever else we were doing. We are primitives. We are ugly people, and the Lord accepts us all the time, over and over again, no matter how ugly we are. You know, you've just been around people who did not know that they were talking too much. It's talk, talk, talk. They're not letting other people participate. We're not saying that's a sin. We're just saying it's kind of ugly, you know, and we're all ugly in so many ways. And the Lord accepts us. So not just the grand acceptance, salvation, but all those ugly things that we're always doing, accepted even that way, so that we're truly wanted, accepted in the beloved. That's the way Ephesians 1 says it. Rob, you were going to say something once, I think. Rob is bringing up maybe some differences between approving of something and accepting us. And absolutely, when we're talking about sin, Christ can't approve of that. He can still approve of us in general because our sins have been washed away by the blood of Christ, but he can't approve of sin. My earlier point is there are things we do that aren't exactly sin. They're just ugly. I have a relationship with somebody who is terribly physically disabled, terribly physically disabled. He can't eat like we eat. You know, you chew with your mouth shut and all of that. There's no way he can do that. That's simply not going to happen. As a matter of fact, he almost died some time back because he inhaled his food into his lungs. If you're going to be a by the booker, you're going to say, that's just gross. I'm not eating with him. But is that okay? I mean, nobody should eat with him because he chomps his food and snorts and coughs. Is that how it should be? He's not sinning. He's just fragile. And you think, okay, because he has such a bad disability. But we could go to other places where a person doesn't have a disability and he jams food in his mouth and he burps and he's just dirty and stinky. He could help it, I mean, if he knew. And so most of the people he meets in his whole life are going to be repulsed by him and stay away. But the Lord accepts him. And if the Lord accepts him, we receive one another. The Romans 15 context is over doctrinal issues because Romans 14 is all about those dreaded gray areas of the Christian life, you know. So we're right back at it. Say, well, she's going to wear pants to church and she's going to wear a dress to church. And you know what's supposed to happen here? You accept each other. It's okay as Christ accepts you. Shall we even delve into some of the music styles and dress code issues and entertainment issues? And the word is you accept one another. You say, well, that's not the way I would do it. Well, okay, that's fine. That doesn't have to be the way you do it. But you do have to accept one another as Christ accepts you, even if you're a little bit ugly. Tracy. Well, these one another texts are uniquely for the family of God. That doesn't mean that there's no crossover with those who are in the world, but it means that you are, what is possible for us is not possible without Christ. I mean, they can approach it by degrees. There can be some wonderful unsaved people who do these various things, submit to one another, accept one another, that kind of thing. But the degree that we can achieve here in the family of God is untouchable, is extraordinary. So there is some crossover to lost people, but don't count on it. Particularly don't count on it coming back to you. Well, let's look at some more. Care for one another. Again, this is secret. Obviously, it's precious. Read it with me from 1 Corinthians 12. That there should be no schism in the body, but that all the members should have the same care one for another. So we're caring for one another. You care about what happens to me. I care about what happens to you. I am wishing for your success and your happiness, and you're wishing for my success and happiness. And then you really do care about that. It is so insidious. It sneaks up on you, this ugliness that makes it hard for you to rejoice when somebody else comes into good fortune. So, did you know I just inherited $1 million? Oh, I hate you. It is hard to rejoice with those who rejoice, but we should rejoice with those. I care about you. Did you? You got $1 million. That's great. God bless you. That's really extraordinary. You want to get together at Christmas? You know, whatever. No, it doesn't. To be able to celebrate, you know, this guy just passed me up for a promotion. He's a Christian brother. I wanted the same job. He passed me up. Like, you know what? That's great. God bless you. You passed me up. I'm glad. I'm cheering for you. I really want you to succeed. I think that's just great. And that's what we're after. Well, the next category here is the larger one. And these are things that are spoken and done toward one another. And so a lot of this has to do with words. As always, words are everywhere in Scripture. And James 5:16, say it with me. Confess your faults one to another. Well, of course, the idea is not to confess your faults, say, to a priest, so that he can diagnose and prescribe what comes next. The idea is that you confess your faults to the person who is affected by your faults. The priest is not affected by that. And there's no reason to go between an entire congregation and yourself if the entire congregation has not been affected. But when your faults have hurt your wife, you have to go to your wife and say, I was wrong. When your faults have affected your Christian brother, you have to go and say, that was a fault in me. I was wrong. And, you know, in this day and age of people not doing that, you know, you see what it says, right? I mean, is there any word in that phrase that you don't understand? So why is it that instead of doing that, we just slink away and go to another church? I'll never confess my faults. I'll be at First Baptist if you need me. See, that's different. You know, I'm not going to confess my faults to my wife. You know, she's got enough faults of her own. Let her confess hers first. Maybe I'll confess mine. I'm certainly not going to confess my faults to my children just because I hurt them a little bit. You know, all parents make a mistake. Parenting is hard and they're just pipsqueaks anyway. And they owe me. It's just, no, you go to your 7-year-old child and you say, I was wrong. And I don't want you to act like I just acted. And I don't want you to emulate my behavior, my attitude. That was wrong. And I am fixing that, you know, between me and the Lord. That's not going to happen around here anymore. I confess that that was wrong. And you do that with every person who is affected in your life. Josiah. Yeah, well, basically, we're cross-referencing James and Jesus because they are running parallel almost all the time. When Jesus was talking about in Matthew 18, for example, there's an offense, you go to the brother by yourself. So you don't start with the church. You go to the brother by yourself and see if everything can be straightened out. And then after that, you take 2 or 3 witnesses. And after that, you bring it to the whole congregation. So you don't start, say, I'd like to go up on the platform and say something. I was rude to my little boy at breakfast yesterday morning, and I just wanted you all to know. We don't need to know that. Your little boy needs to know that. But we as a congregation don't need to know that. So we're following the Matthew 18 idea there. And the one another idea. So it's not like I'm confessing my faults to the hundreds. It's like, no, to you. To you and you to me. Individuals talking to each other. And not a one to 200, that idea. That's great. That's right. I mean, you hear all the time people say, well, you just think that you do everything just right. And we must not portray that or allow somebody to believe that. We can endeavor to be as right as possible, but it's very good for us to say periodically, I could very well be wrong about this. Or I did not handle that well. That was not a good job. I'm sorry. There's that great story of Spurgeon when one of his deacons did something wrong, like, you know, physically, tangibly with the building wrong. I think he left the doors unlocked. It was subject to vandalism or something. And Spurgeon kind of let him have it. And the deacon, in that old British way, said, yes, governor, you know, talking to Spurgeon, he's not a governor, but that's what they said. Yes, governor, I'm sure you're right, but you know, it was done by somebody who would surely die for you. Like, oh, how awful. You know, Spurgeon's heart smote him. And so, yes, you know, I left the door unlocked and it could have caused robbery, vandalism, so many things. I'm wrong. And that was very disarming for Spurgeon. Confess your faults. Just say, yeah, you're right. I'm a thousand fools. I left the door unlocked. You're right. That's very bad. Hopefully, it's not like Spurgeon will then never confess his faults because he wrote it in his biography. I did this to this nice deacon. And so he confessed his faults and the other fellow confessed his, and away we go. Private sins are repented of in private, and public sins are repented of in public. And that's very important.